Now
get the funnel. I mean, are you running this joint or aren't you? Now, if you done retired, just tell me. I mean, that's okay. Just let me know, and I'll find you one of them old folks' homes where you can sit around all day playing checkers and eating grits. You finished? Yeah, just about. One of these days, I'm gonna split this joint, man, because I'm getting sick and tired of doing all the work around here while you play that piano.
Why are you always talking about leaving? If you just be patient, I'll be gone soon, and all this will be yours.
Are you serious? Do you think I'm gonna stay in this ridiculous business all my life? I'm going on to bigger and better things.
Like what?
Like shipbuilding.
How are you, DeMar?
I'm fine. How are you?
Good. Welcome to the show. Welcome to PMPnetwork.com.
Showing up now?
Yeah, we're fine now. Okay. Yeah. You know, it's interesting. Obviously, I'm a big Sanford and Son fan. Who wasn't? But you were on there for a while, and then Red left the show, and you've gone on to many other things.
Uh-huh.
Let's talk a little bit about you. Where are you from growing up, and how'd you get into showbiz?
Grew up in New York. New York City.
Uh-huh.
Started in the business at 6 and a half professionally.
Wow.
Yeah.
What was your first job on a paid gig?
On a paid gig, commercial on WOR-FM as a pitch person for the safety council or whatever. Yeah.
Hard to remember back then, huh?
Huh?
It's hard to remember.
National Safety Council of America, it used to be called.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Now, what was your first TV gig?
The Children's Hour, NBC.
The Children's Hour?
Yeah.
I don't remember that one.
How old are you?
I'm old. I'm 48.
You wouldn't remember it then.
No?
You'd have to be at least 55.
Really? When did it air?
The Children's Hour?
Yeah.
54.
Oh, that was the year I was born. So I guess
well,
I would.
That's why I said you wouldn't remember.
Yeah, so I wouldn't remember.
People
that.
On that show are a little older than you now. Larry Kirk. I don't know if you remember Larry Kirk. He did the original West Side Story on Broadway.
No.
Bernadette Peters.
Know her? Yeah.
Yeah. Most of the kids are a little older.
So Bernadette was.
Hines.
Yeah, we actually had Bernadette on the show, so that means you're the second person from the from that show.
Gregory Hines is about 56.
Gregory Hines, yeah.
Uh huh.
When you worked on Sanford and Son, I would assume that every day must have been an adventure working with Red Fox.
Well, every day was fun, put it that way. It wasn't an adventure. It was an adventure for the producers, and the writers, and the actors that guest starred on the program. For Red and I, we just had fun. Aside from the political things that we had to deal with and knowing that we were setting a precedent for others to come after us, we had fun.
Yeah.
And, some people perceived it as being fun at their expense. But it wasn't. We knew that we had to have a certain amount of enthusiasm and a certain amount of vim and vigor and bringing those characters every week to the screen. And so that's what we did. We didn't allow anything. You know, lots of times when you do a movie or a situation comedy, sometimes the politics of the show can detract from what comes across on the screen. And for us, the bottom line was people enjoying their program, and we see we were successful because 30 years later, people are still tripping on it.
Yeah. We
never allowed anybody, the writers would come in there and they wanted to be morose and serious, and the producers would come in and they would have their problems with the network, and then we as black men doing a, being first in a certain sense, came into a situation. But we allowed nothing to stop us from having fun, and mm. that's what we did. And we goofed on ourselves, we goofed on guest stars, we goofed on the producers, so that by the time we hit the air on those two shows on Friday, that enthusiasm and that fun and that whole thing came across. And when it stopped being fun, Red went to CBS, and so did I.
Yeah. No, it's interesting. It's amazing to me that Nick at Night brings all these great shows back, and that a whole new generation will grow up loving Sanford and Son. And tomorrow morning at 6 a.m., they got 48 straight hours of Nick at Night. And
TV Land.
That TV Land. Well, yeah, you're right. It's TV Land, but of course, same channel. But. Same company, but different team. You're right, TV right. Land. And it's regularly seen on TV Land, 6 o'clock, 6:30, and 9 o'clock every single night, 7 nights a week. Mm-hmm. So you can get your fill of Sanford and Son. Tell me a little bit about Red. I mean, I've heard his stand-up. He was one of the funniest guys I've ever heard, and he had a great filthy mouth, which I enjoyed. And he must have been a lot of fun between takes.
He did Blue Material. Yeah, he was Red. He did, he was Red Fox.
So he should be named Blue, maybe, instead of Red.
Blue Fox. Yeah, he could be pretty foul-mouthed in his nightclub act. But that still doesn't take anything away from the characters, because those two characters are sealed in a time capsule, and regardless of what his life went to later on, and regardless of what he did in his personal life and I did in my personal life, those shows speak for themselves. Red was funny. We laughed. Like I told you, we had fun.
Yeah.
We had fun. We laughed at people. We laughed at ourselves. Now, when you start taking yourself seriously as an individual, then I think your life is pretty much over. One of the things that I feel sorry for are people that have no sense of humor.
Mm.
I've been around people that have no, that are void of any kind of sense of humor, and their lives are boring as hell. They're boring to be around. And so we used to say to them all the time, they say, well, you guys don't take anything seriously. And we say, yeah, but look, we're in the top 10 every week.
Yeah.
From number 1 to number 10 spot every week. So why should we take ourselves seriously? Why? We're not going to do that. So we had fun, and we kept that ambiance, that atmosphere was prevalent 7 days a week. And as I said before, when it ceased being fun, we went out of there.
Right.
You can't do a comedy when there's no fun left in it.
No.
Like chewing bubble gum with no sweetening in it. Big piece of nasty tasting sticky stuff.
Yeah. A lot of people don't know this, but I actually happened to see the episode. I know you did a couple of All in the Families, but one of them was done before Sanford and Son show. Was that how Norman Lear found you?
I only did one episode on All in the Family.
Well, I think you did. Didn't you do one after the Sanford and Son too?
I think I would know how many episodes I did on All in the Family.
Oh, okay.
There was one.
I have you being in an episode called Edith Finds an Old Man in 1973, and another one where you played Horace in 1971.
No, 71 was accurate.
Inaccurate.
71 was accurate.
Yeah, 71 is accurate. You played Horace in the film, in the show.
In 71. That
okay.
was before Sanford.
Let me cross out the other one. But is that where Norman Lear found you?
Norman Lear?
Yeah.
I don't know about Norman Lear. I know that Bud Yorkin and John Rich saw me on that. Norman Lear had very little to do
no,
with
I'm
that.
Sorry. I'm talking, you have to excuse me, I have a flu today.
Okay.
So my head is like in the middle of nowhere.
It's
but the people who did All in the Family,
Norman Lear and Buddy Yorkin.
Right. Also did the Sanford and Son show.
Not really.
No.
No. Norman Lear and Bud Yorkin were partners. They had a production company called Tandem Productions.
Mm-hmm.
And they had the exclusive rights to Till Death Do Us Part, which was the English show of All in the Family.
Right.
And Steptoe and Son, which was the English version of Sanford and Son.
Okay.
The fact that they were partners had nothing to do, one show had nothing to do with another. Norman Lear was exclusive, pretty much 99, like a polygraph test. He was 99.9%, or
yeah.
pregnancy test, to All in the Family. He came around once in a while in Sanford and Son, said hi to everybody.
Right.
But it was Buddy Yorkin, Norman's partner, and John Rich, who was the director of All in the Family exclusively for the first 5-6 years, who wanted me to do that. They saw some footage on a film that I had done, and they wanted me to be a part of that All in the Family thing. I didn't want to do it because I didn't want to do television. You know, I wanted to do films and stage. That's my background.
Yeah.
My agent convinced me. He said, these are the hot boys in town. You know, these are the guys that are on the rise, and you need to be seen in these circles like this. So he convinced me to do All in the Family, but I never wanted to do it. Hmm. As a result of that, Bud Yorkin saw that, and he said Red Fox had done a film called Cotton Comes to Harlem in 69,
mm-hmm.
circa 69, 70, and he played Uncle Bud, a junk dealer. And so he said, hey, let's put these two elements together and see what flies, see if it flies. That's how it happened.
So Yorkin gets all the credit.
No, John Rich was a part of that too.
Yeah.
I had very little to do with Norman Lear. He'd come around and I'd say hi to Norman, hi to Mon. But it was Aaron Rubin, Buddy Yorkin, initially.
Yeah.
Aaron Rubin did Goma Powell USMC, the Andy Griffith Show, and he was Nat Hiken's nephew. Nat Hiken was the executive producer of the Sergeant Bilko series with Bill Silver. So that it was basically Aaron Rubin and Buddy Yorkin that held that fort down.
Now, one of your other series was airing on cable for a while there, New Odd Couple.
Uh-huh. That was my favorite show.
Yeah, did you like that? Did you enjoy that show?
That was my favorite show. I think that was my finest work.
Really?
Yeah.
What is it about the show that you think was?
For me personally, I think it was my finest work.
Yeah.
The show itself was a derivative. It was a watered down version of The Odd Couple, and the reason that it did not go was because they didn't spin it far enough away from the initial characters. And for the first year, we were basically doing the shows that Klugman and Randall did. And, you had Walter Matthau and Jack Lemmon, followed by Jack Klugman and Tony Randall. So it was difficult. Had they taken that show and spun it off into a totally new arena, it would have made it. But they were doing the same scripts, and people were conversing with those scripts.
So they never actually adjusted the scripts for the new talent?
No.
That's interesting.
Yeah, they adjusted them, but it was the same storyline.
Yeah.
You know, with the what's-her-name sisters upstairs and Felix Lee's home and his wife coming, they took the first 2 years of the Odd Couple, and they just put a little tiny twist on them, but it was the same story, and people had seen those stories. They had seen those stories first run and by that time in syndication.
Hmm.
So, now,
one of the things, again, I had the wrong information about one of your old series, about one of your guest appearances, but did you also appear on Rowan and Martin Laughing at one point?
Oh, sure.
You did?
Rowan and Martin Laughing several times.
That must have been... That show, at least from the vantage point of the viewer like myself, uh-huh. That looked like such a blast.
It was very silly. It was crazy. George Slatter and that whole crew, Goldie Hawn, the Dan Ruin and Dick Martin were I had met them before Sanford and Son went on the air in Vegas through Red, and we hung out a few times together. So I loved their team, but that whole show, you know, Artie Johnson and Gibson and what's her name, the big crazy gal,
Joanne Worley, we had her on the show.
Worley, yeah. Joanne and that whole crew, they were wacky, and it, that set was done like Sanford and Son. It was fun.
Yeah.
People came on there and had fun. It wasn't like, okay, it's work now. It was like Dean Martin. Dean Martin didn't rehearse. Dean Martin would walk in there on Thursday and shoot a show and go home. But he kept it light, and it was fun. And Rowan and Martin's Laughing, that set was like that. It was crazy. Nobody knew what anybody was going to do next. And you had they gave you the freedom. The producers gave you the freedom to... You know, you had to say the lines, but they gave you the freedom. If you ad-libbed and it was funny, they wouldn't stop the tape. Just keep going.
Devon, you actually did a film with Sidney Poitier, didn't you?
Yeah, The Organization.
Yeah, what was that like working with that gentleman? He's one of the greatest actors that I think have ever lived.
Really?
In my opinion.
Well, okay, you're entitled to your opinion.
You don't agree with that, huh?
No, I don't.
Really?
No.
I just think that some of the roles I've seen him in, To Serve with Love and In the Heat of the Night, some of the ones I've seen.
I reverence Sidney Poitier, but I don't think he's the greatest actor. By far, I'm not even going to go there.
You're not going to go there, huh?
Not
wow.
Even. Not even.
I just think that he was an incredible actor. And I kind of miss him on the screen.
It's like beauty's in the eye of the beholder.
That is true.
His daughter.
Who are some of your favorite actors? Who do you think is...
His daughter has a new series on right now. On UPN.
Yeah.
Sidney Star.
Who do you think is one of the best actors that ever lived? If you were going to pick a few that you think are someone, you know...
That's ever lived?
Yeah, I mean, if just someone that you really admire...
There are a lot of people that come to mind, for certain types of roles. I think Brando's a great actor. I always loved Carl Malden. I thought that Edward G. Robinson was a great actor. I liked James Earl Jones before he prostituted himself and started doing everything. You know, it's like I wanted to say, Jimmy, you can turn some things down, you know. I think that... there's a lot of people. I think Meryl Streep is a fine actor.
Yeah, it's funny that you mentioned Carl Malden, because many people who are listening right now are thinking, well, that's the guy from Streets from San Francisco, but he was an incredible movie actor. He did some great stuff.
Desire. You know, Carl Malden was in that the Western thing with Brando, One-Eyed Jax. Carl Malden is a fine actor.
Yes, I was going to say, his movie career was incredible before he got into that TV show.
Well, yeah, but, you know, you have people that have a TV mentality, and that's all they know. And then you have people that that have embraced films as well as television, and they know the embodiment of work that Carl Malden has left behind. I think he's a fine actor.
Are there any TV shows that you regularly watch nowadays?
No, I don't watch episodical television. I watch occasionally... If I can avoid, derrieres going up and down in the air and nude scenes, which I find offensive, I'm from the era where Burt Lancaster would kiss. There's another fine actor would kiss whoever, and they would be in the house or on the beach, and then the camera would pan slowly away, and you'd see the ocean. It'd be the next morning. Everybody could figure out what happened. I don't need to see their backsides. I don't want to see that.
I'm glad you mentioned that whole thing, because one of the things that really bothers me about TVs and movies now is the immorality of it.
Yeah.
One of my favorite shows is actually on PAX. It's called Doc, and I like the PAX network.
Yeah.
I understand that you became a minister in 1984.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I did. Following my destiny.
Excuse me?
Following my destiny.
Yeah.
Was aware of that since I was about 10, 11, 12 years old.
You always wanted to do that?
No, I always knew that I was going to do that.
Wow.
It wouldn't be a destiny if I wanted to do it. It would be a vocation. A destiny is something that you don't really have any control over.
Right.
That your life is moving towards that, and you know it, and there's nothing you can do to stop it.
And why would you want to stop it, actually?
Well, I couldn't if I wanted to. I had a sense of my destiny in this world. From the time I came into it, from right around the age of 4, 5, 6, I used to tell my mother, and she said, I know, just don't tell people because they'll think you're strange. And my mother was from the old school. She believed if you said some certain things to people, they could hinder it from happening in your life. But she was from that old school. Bless her.
Right. Now, you also, in 94, formed the Restoration House, a vocational training program for former inmates.
The first time.
I know you're doing some promotions now for Nick, obviously, for TV Land, to promote the series, but are you still dabbling in acting at all as well?
Yeah, I got a film out now, and I've written a screenplay that we're trying to start doing this summer, called The Legend of Ned Turner, Freedom Fighter. I've written a very serious book that came out worldwide in 98. It's about to go into its second printing. So I keep my hand in every now and then. When I do, you know, I did a few films back in the 90s. Did one with Danny Aiello and Kathy Moriarty called Me and the Kid. These were all decent films, no nude scenes. very, very slack on profanity. You know, I just can't. I have six children, and I don't want to die and have my grandchildren say, look what your grandfather did. Look at this man. Why, I think Denzel was a very fine actor until he did Training Day, and I don't understand it. I don't understand why he wanted to embrace the dark side. Had a brilliant career otherwise. Family man, but then he comes out on the screen with Training Day. I mean, you know, you see Lawrence Fishburne embrace the dark side coming out of the chute. And Wesley Snipes embraced that dark side coming out of the chute. So I wasn't surprised at them, but I was surprised that Denzel went that way.
What did you think of Halle Berry in...
Halle Berry?
Halle Berry's in Monsters Ball and some of the things she's done.
I don't think much of that at all. I don't know why a woman would degrade herself, would denigrate herself with that kind of sexually implicit, explicit film. I don't see it. I mean, I kind of would expect that from Billy Bob Thornton. I think he's a fine actor, but he's from that dark side school.
Right.
Why did Halle Berry have to do that? Why did she want to... To me, if I were a woman and I did a scene like that, I would think, well, maybe I don't want to do this because one day I'm not going to be 26 years old and people are not going to think that I got this great body with these plastic breasts, and I might want to have children one day, and my grandchildren will see this, seeing this guy flipping mommy on one side and flipping her on the other side and doing all of these sexually explicit things. That's embarrassing. How could you, in honest conscience, do that? But what price glory? There are people that will sell their soul for the trinkets and the baubles that sick Hollywood community will give them.
And then on the other hand, there are people making films like Left Behind, the movie, that's trying to make a positive message.
And the film that I'm trying to get off the ground right now. But,
yeah.
You know, that's not what's selling right now.
I know.
Sex, violence, you know, the kids have been desensitized so much with all of the violence and the sex and that are in films today.
I think the worst statement we can make about this country right now is that the number one... A film star and the number one music star last year is Eminem. That's pretty
sad.
But
that's just temporary. He's not the number one anything.
Unfortunately,
his film made more money than any of the films right now, but he's not the number one anything. He couldn't act his way out of it.
You know, he sold more records than anybody else last year, too.
But that's what I'm saying. Look at who's buying those records. Kids are buying those records.
I know.
Look at the whole rap culture. Kids are buying that stuff.
Well, my house with my kids aren't allowed to buy that
and
stuff.
And the media is catering to it because it has to do with dollars and cents. They're catering to a youth market. All it takes is for somebody to come along with one decent type film. I'm not talking about a preachy film. My film is not preachy. I'm not preaching to anybody. But the media is so powerful that if somebody comes along with something that is strong, it can change the paradigm and flip this whole script around. Hollywood is not going to do it.
Do you have a website where folks can keep in touch with you?
Sure. I've got an email address that they can email.
You want to give it out so folks can keep in contact with you?
I don't know if I want to do that because then I'll be inundated.
That's true.
With stuff like that. I did that when I first came out with the Restoration House project, and they called me a week after the thing went online, and they said, Ms. Wilson, what do you want to do with these messages? I said, what are you talking about? They said you got 2,800 of them. I can't. How are you going to answer 28? If I give them my website, I'm going to get Joe Schmlo and Uncle Joe.
Yeah, and they all want autograph photos.
Yeah, and it's just, you know, so I don't want it.
Well, I want to wish you a lot of luck with Restoration House and everything else that you're doing. And when the new film comes out, if you want to promote it, please contact pmpnetwork.com. And we'll definitely give it a push for you.
I appreciate it.
It was nice to talk to you.
Nice talking to you. It was nice to hear from somebody who's got their feet planted on the ground.
Well, my feet are a little bit wobbly because of my flu, but otherwise they're all right.
Yeah, well, that's temporary. But, that's like Eminem's success. It's just temporary.
Yeah. Well, good luck, and I'm sure folks out there are going to be overdosing on Infinite Sun starting tomorrow morning on TV Land at 6 a.m. 48 straight hours.
Bless their little memorabiliac hearts.
And of course, if you miss the weekend, if you're away or something like that, every night, 6:30 and 9 o'clock on TV Land, you can catch an episode of Sanford and Son. And thank you so much for coming on. And
my pleasure.
Good luck with everything.
Have a great year.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.